Well, good evening. Welcome to the show. It's our third podcast here at Geek Tyrants, and our goal is to get better each and every week until about the seventh week, and then we're just going to plan on leveling off and settling into a nice, comfortable mediocrity. That I think is going to be the best way for us to go. But no, we're going to have a good show for you here tonight. Going to talk about box office numbers. What's making in the dough? Not much this past weekend, but we'll get into that later. The panel's going to contribute their best and worst things that they saw this week. Find out what is good and what's not so good. Of course, as usual, the general movie is industry talk. Casting rumors, announcements, any notable stories we're going to throw out there for you. And then to wrap things up tonight, we'll talk a little bit about what we think you need to be looking for on the TV or at the movies this weekend. First, let's kick this off. Going to introduce the panel here. If you guys don't mind, I've got a new custom I'd like to start this week. I'm going to introduce all of you individually. And when I do introduce you, of course, you know, give your greeting or whatever you want to say. But then I'm going to ask you a totally random movie or TV question, and you have to answer it. So I'm completely putting you on the spot. And then the game is, because it's random and you got to come up with the answer fast, we all have the option of making fun of you or saying, whoa, that was a good answer on short notice. So we'll start with Mr. Abe Froman. How you doing, Abe?
I'm doing good, buddy. How you doing?
I'm fantastic. Where are you joining us from tonight, Abe?
From Los Angeles.
Oh, nice. L.A. That's wonderful. The capital of California. All right. Okay. I'm just kidding.
Is it? No. It's Sacramento.
Abe Froman, real quick, what's the best gangster movie you've ever seen?
Gangster movie I've ever seen? I think lately it got to be, I think, American Gangster. I don't know. For me, it was good.
Really? I don't agree with that. I gotta be honest.
I thought it was great.
I didn't like it.
It wasn't really it wasn't a gang. It was basically just Denzel's character, but I had the word gangster in the movie title, so.
I wouldn't even consider that movie a gangster movie, Abe. I'm sorry.
Oh, nice. Bankman comes out swinging.
I was on the spot.
There you go. See, that's how the game is played. Dr. Bankman, you're out there. Where are you from?
Burbank, California.
Excellent. Burbank. Wonderful.
Capital of California.
Exactly. It is. The Sunshine State. Bankman, what is the best movie musical you have ever seen?
Sweeney Todd.
Sweeney Todd. See, yeah, I can't. Nice. Okay, see, that was quick thinking.
That's the best movie musical I've seen. I'm not going to say Moulin Rouge because I hated that movie. I like Chicago, but it wasn't as good as Sweeney Todd.
Well, Grease.
Or Grease 2.
Sound of Music, man.
Grease is overrated.
Danny, mother effing Zuko.
Oh, Zuko. That's a classic film character.
It's a classic.
Let's see. Who else is out there? Mr. Black, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
And where are you joining us from this evening?
Up in California.
Sweet. Mr. Black, what is the last movie that you got up and walked out of right during in the middle?
The last movie I got up and walked out of?
Yeah, it was just so bad, or because you had other things to do.
Spider-Man 3.
Really? You just didn't like it?
I saw about half of it. I have yet to see the last half.
Oh, you saw the good half.
I applaud you, my friend. Yeah. I couldn't pull myself to walk out. I had to see the car crash. I'm one of those guys that has to look.
Yeah, I have a tough time getting up and walking out of any movie, which is why I wanted to ask somebody that question, because you've got guts. If you can walk out of a movie like that, especially one that you know is going to make that much money and people are going to be talking about it.
And lose your money in the process.
Exactly. you got the cojones to say, look, this movie's so bad, I don't care how many hundreds of millions of dollars it makes, I'm not staying.
A bad story is still a bad story, regardless of how much money it makes or how much money they spent on it. So,
we don't disagree with you there, buddy. But we're just saying it takes the cojones to do it. I couldn't do it. No matter how... It was awful. I couldn't do it, though.
So, yeah. That brings us to Mazer. How you doing, Mazer?
Good, guys. How you doing?
Where are you joining us from this evening?
Joining you guys from Hollywood, the armpit of California.
Sweet. and everybody down here in Alabama, Hollywood is just, ooh, that is Tinseltown.
Apparently you've never been there then.
Yeah.
I've had the pleasure, but I mean, like I said, it's more the people that live here that never get out of Alabama kind of see that through goggles or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they watch TMZ, I guess. And that always paints a wonderful picture of Hollywood. Well, Mazer,
I got
it. Is it?
Yeah. I mean, it really does make things just seem so nasty. Mazer, which science fiction movie is better, Return of the Jedi or The Matrix?
I'm going to say The Matrix, obviously. Return of the Jedi, I mean, it's the closing of a trilogy, but they close it off with those little Ewoks. Should have been Wookiees. And The Matrix, I mean, that's just the cultural phenomenon now. So,
can I do a follow-up question with that?
Sure, go ahead.
Return of the Jedi or the third Matrix movie?
What kind of question is that?
I'm gonna go with Return of the Jedi because I didn't like the fight with Neo and Smith at the end. I thought it would have been cool if he fought thousands of Smiths at the same time. I was waiting out for that, but it didn't happen.
All right.
Yeah, I thought the second and third Matrix movies were so bad that I honestly thought maybe that everybody should stop making movies forever. But that should. Thank goodness they didn't. No, it was really
game.
Hard.
Half the movie looked like a video game, didn't it? Like, CG was just so bad.
It's true. It's true. I don't know if they used human beings in the making of that movie. It's all CG.
Yeah.
Especially Keanu Reeves. Okay, well, in fairness, does anybody want to ask me a question? You don't have to. But, you know, I put you all on the spot, so I should at least open myself up for that. Nobody? Good. We're moving on.
Dang it. I couldn't think of one.
No, somebody started one, I heard.
Yeah,
I was going to say, what is the best chick flick you've ever seen?
The best chick flick I've ever seen? Very quickly, I'll say The Notebook.
Oh.
The first time I saw it, I really liked it.
I'm gonna watch.
I did.
I'm watching that tonight, actually. I've never seen it.
Nice.
With
you've never seen it.
By yourself.
Never seen it.
I was going to say, you're not watching that alone.
Yeah, thanks.
It's so sweet and kind of sad.
That's all applaud Mazer's loneliness.
Yeah, that's right. Good job, buddy. No, that was good. All right, well, that's our panel. Just to remind you, we got Abe Froman, Dr. Venkman, Mr. Black, Mazer, and I am EMH, and thrilled to be here tonight. Let's talk about the box office this weekend, because this was actually, I don't want to say historic, but something happened over the weekend at the box office that hadn't happened in like 5 years.
What?
Well, we're gonna talk about it. What was the big movie that came out this week? Everybody knows out there, right?
Well, it was Bangkok Dangerous.
Bangkok Dangerous.
Wasn't that the biggest movie to come out this week?
It was the biggest movie to come out this week. As a matter of fact, nothing in the top 20 movies of the weekend was in its first opening week except Bangkok Dangerous, so there was no competition whatsoever. The number one movie in the country, Bangkok Dangerous. Everybody take a guess at what you think it opened at this weekend.
I'm going out on a limb. I'm going to say 21 million.
21 million.
Super, I'm going super low. I'm going 5 million.
Very nice. He's setting the bar very low for Bangkok
Dangerous. That's what it deserved to make.
I agree with that. I was just thinking, maybe I wasn't even thinking practically. I don't know.
who hasn't guessed?
I'll say about 13.7.
Wow.
Ooh.
How about you, Mazer?
I'm going to go with 15.
Bangkok Dangerous made $7.8 million over the weekend.
I win.
Oh. Yay, Froman wins.
The Price is Right.
Now, I didn't do the research.
And that's number one?
Yes. Keep this in mind.
That is insane. Wow.
That movie opened on 2,650 screens. It only made $7.8 million more than the video of my son's football game that I recorded Thursday night. Which played on zero screens at all. So, but the reason it was, I don't want to say, like I said, I don't want to call it historic, but the reason it was somewhat notable is the first time that the total weekend box office gross, $66 million. If you add up all the movies combined this weekend, $66 million.
Wow.
It hasn't happened since September of 2003.
Wow. What opened that weekend?
Well, that's a fair question. Does anybody know what opened in September of 2003? Because I don't.
I have no idea. Pause for Wikipedia.
Because I saw one story that said it was the lowest opening since 2001. And I looked up 2001, and that was like Hardball with Keanu Reeves, who's been mentioned twice now on the podcast, which is kind of scary.
Will he be mentioned again?
Well, we will wait and see as our listeners wait with bated breath. But if you go back to 2000, same weekend in 2003, number one movie in the country. Dickie Roberts, former child star.
Oh, wow. Gosh.
The David Spade comedy debuts at number one with $6.6 million.
Wow.
Wow. See,
number one with that. Now, number two, Tropic Thunder, which is still, it's still pretty strong. It's a budget of $92 million. It's already grossed $96 million. So it's going to cross the $100 million mark, which leads me to another question for you guys. It seemed that as recently as 10 years ago, the gold standard for having a box office hit, a box office blockbuster was $100 million. You had to get to $100 million before you could say that your movie was a blockbuster. What do you guys think that number should be today?
For a blockbuster?
To call it a blockbuster, because you've got inflation. You've also got the fact that movies are not released anymore to make money in the long run. They're released to make as many as they can in four weekends, and then they're gone. So what do you think you should have to make to be a blockbuster? Is it 150? Is it 100?
No, I'd say 250 to 300,000. A million.
Yeah, I would say 300 million.
Wow. See, I don't know if I'd raise the bar that much, but
well, that's what we're doing here. That's what we do. We raise the bar high, keep tiring.
I'm tired of every movie being called a blockbuster. So,
yeah,
that's very true. I'm getting sick of that. Of course, third this weekend was The House Bunny. Has anybody seen that?
Wait, okay, no.
Okay, good. I actually feel good about that. And number four, The Dark Knight, which is now $512 million.
Oh, man. Weekend it could, if only the people would have listened.
Well, yeah, if they re-release Batman, The Dark Knight, every year, it could cross over time.
Oh, you're right. You're right about that. If you could have some re-releases, reissues, I think they call them.
Yeah.
If The Dark Knight can't be Titanic domestically, I don't think it will ever happen, to be honest with you.
You don't think anything will beat Titanic?
At this point, I don't think anything will beat Titanic. If The Dark Knight couldn't do it, I just don't see it.
The Dark Knight would have to win an Oscar. It would have to win Oscar for like Best Picture and give it like a huge second win to be able to carry it over.
Yeah, and even that would be tough because, again, in this day that we live in, most likely The Dark Knight is going to be out on DVD well before the Oscars anyway. So
yep.
I think that would hurt a re-release. I tell you what, though, and I know that there are a lot of people out there that would love to see The Dark Knight cross over or beat Titanic, but I will say this. The Dark Knight had... And I don't know the numbers, so I guess I can't back this up. But wouldn't you say The Dark Knight had a much bigger marketing campaign than Titanic did?
Oh, it was huge. It was one of the biggest marketing campaigns I've seen in a film, to be honest with you.
The Dark Knight came out in the middle of the summer. Titanic came out at Christmas, which is not a horrible movie release time, but it's not as big as the summer. And, you know, also Titanic, 3 hours and 14 minutes long, which Dark Knight was 2.5 hours. But when you keep people going back for that much repeat business to see a 3-hour movie, that just, to me,
they did something right.
You know what they did right?
Yeah.
They had Kate Winslet topless.
Exactly. Which, can you imagine if Leonardo DiCaprio had died about 5 months before Titanic came out?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
He would have been nominated for an Oscar and won.
And it made like $800 million. That's a lot of money. Golly.
This is how Dark Knight can beat Titanic. Tack on some deleted scene at the very end of the movie, re-release that sucker, and people will go see that just for the ending.
Exactly. It's true. So, if they want to make more money, if they're listening, there's your idea.
There's your idea. That's this week's idea for the Geek Tyrant.
Hey, Pixar did it with their blooper reels for the Toy Story movies. So
do
it. Oh, yeah. See,
remember that?
Pixar's brilliant.
I like Pixar.
I still say Wally's the best movie I've seen this year, so I mean, I'm going to agree with you. I love Pixar. Rounding out the top five was Traitor with Don Cheadle.
Good movie.
Vinkman, you said you liked this. I'm surprised this movie, I mean, there was no Bourne movie this year, and that's what I've heard it compared to.
I don't think it compared to it at all. Bourne Supremacy was so much more intense with more action throughout the movie. It was pretty slow. I mean, this movie moved at a snail's pace compared to the Bourne series.
But don't you think Don Cheadle is a very underrated actor?
But I kind of want him to stay that way because if he becomes overrated, then no one will go see his movies. Wait, did that make sense?
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. I mean, I'm not gonna.
I don't know. Where he's at right now in his career. I like the stuff he's been doing.
Oh, he's really good. Do you remember him in Boogie Nights?
Yes.
I mean,
how can you not?
He worked at the stereo store and he sold the stereos and he was trying. His big pitch was, this is high fidelity. This is a hi-fi system. It's high fidelity. That means this is the highest fidelity that you can get in a stereo. and he would turn on the country western stations and go on and get freaky deaky with it. I do. So sorry, I went to the Bahamas there for a minute.
Nice.
Please forgive me there. But that's your top five. Bangkok Dangerous, Tropic Thunder, The House Bunny, The Dark Knight, and Traitor. Scanning down the rest of the movies, it looks like Mirrors has kind of faded away. It was number 12 this week. It's gonna struggle to reach $35 million.
I don't see Jack Bauer doing horror films. That's all.
I like Kiefer Sutherland, and I would like to see him do a really good suspenseful horror movie. And I think it wasn't the dude on here last week that said he really liked Mirrors, or maybe it was the first week. He said he really liked that movie.
Yeah, the dude. He said he really liked Mirrors. So.
I don't know. I want you guys' opinion on Star Wars, The Clone Wars. I know we talked about it a little bit last week, but that movie, are you surprised that, I mean, it's at $32 million. It's already fading. It probably won't hit $40 million. Do you think that's, you know, are people tired of the story or they just didn't want to see it or what?
No, first of all, before the movie came out, it just got terrible reviews. I mean, no one was liking this movie. I honestly, before I saw it, I didn't read one good review on it. And I think that may have been one of the reasons why it didn't do so well. When I saw it, I mean, the movie was made for TV in the first place. And I think a lot of the people that wrote those reviews forgot that. It was what it was. It wasn't a great film. But it works as a Saturday morning kids cartoon. And that's what it was made for. So, I mean, it wasn't that bad, but it wasn't that good either. It was a Saturday morning cartoon for the kids.
Yeah, I agree completely. It was It's gonna be a great TV. Yeah, it's gonna be a great show for kids. That's pretty much it.
Other than that, I mean, it just did not work as a movie, and people saw right through that. It was just a way for them to make a few million dollars for something that they already had planned to release on TV anyway. So why not make some extra money by sticking the first four episodes up in the theaters?
Yeah, and promoting the TV show.
And promoting your TV show at the same time. I mean, they got everything they wanted out of releasing that movie, except for the bad reviews, I'm sure.
Right. Well, that makes sense then. Further down the list, yeah, you know, I'm tired of the Star Wars stuff too. I mean, I get it. I get it, guys. I get it. Enough, George Lucas.
I would rather have seen like a Shadow of the Empire.
Yeah.
Like if they're gonna be bridging some gaps, go more to the old school films and.
Yeah, they already touched on the Clone Wars too, and so I think the Clone Wars is kind of a whatever. I could use a different side of the story.
Let's just redo Episode 1, 2, and 3. Let's just do that.
That right, because that apparently is how it works. We were talking about that last week.
We'll just reimagine
Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, Part 2, reimagine. Great.
Special edition.
Nah. Director's cut. Okay, also, I'm actually pretty relieved to see the movie College, in its second week out, made less than $1 million. Total gross now for College, $4.1 million. The budget was $7 million. This movie, which, you know, may, you know, eclipse, I don't know, $8, $9, $10 million on video, but certainly looks like it's not even going to make its money back, which actually kind of restores my faith.
It'll make its money back in DVDs.
Yeah, yes. That's a DVD movie for
that's where it will make its money back. But I agree with you. I'm happy with the fact that the audience is getting smarter, and they're not going to these crappy movies.
Well, what people have to understand is you can take a movie like Knocked Up or The 40-Year-Old Virgin, and I'm not going to argue with anybody who says, look, that's vulgar comedy, it's disgusting, and in that breath, they put it in the same category as movies like American Pie Presents Band Camp, any National Lampoon's movie you see at your video store. But at the same time, I also try to tell people, look, you may not like the content, and it may be vulgar or whatever to you, but 40-Year-Old Virgin is a smart movie.
And Knocked Up
was a smart movie. It's not just, you know, guys getting high and writing gross out jokes or sex jokes or whatever. And it looks like this movie, College, tried to do that.
It was not a smart movie.
Will Ferrell is going to have another $100 million hit to his resume. Step Brothers next weekend should cross over that mark. Again, I thought that movie, I didn't think it was good. I thought it was very funny. Has everyone seen Step Brothers?
Not yet.
No.
You should see it. It's funny.
Just EMH.
I'm waiting to watch it on DVD. That doesn't seem like something I
want
to
see it. It's just I haven't. Yeah, it's probably going to have to wait till it comes out on DVD. For me,
if Venkman's waiting for a movie to come on DVD, he's got low expectations.
I don't have low expectations. I actually thought when I saw the trailer, I thought it was going to be hilarious. It's just there were so many other movies out that I couldn't keep up, and I had to pick and choose what movies I saw, and that just didn't make my list and priorities.
I've heard nothing but good things about it. Everyone who's seen it says they love it.
It's pretty.
I just need to go give more money to Dark Knight. That's what I need to do.
There you go. Put more money in the Dark Knight kitty. Because they might not make a sequel if it doesn't make some more money.
Probably not.
Okay. I thought you know, we'd go ahead and add a little something extra to this little part of the podcast. Play a little this week in box office history. 10 years ago, we were looking at, 1998. Does anybody want to guess what the number one movie in the country was in 1998, the same weekend?
1998.
Blade? Was it Blade?
Blade?
That was that Mr. Black?
Yeah.
That was so close, Mr. Black. I mean, that was so close. That was awesome guess. Anybody else?
Okay, so
no, I'm not kidding. No, I you know what? That might have sounded sarcastic. The reason that was Blade was the number two movie in the country 10 years ago today.
Wow. So,
and you know what?
It Bravo, was less, Mr. Black.
It was less than $150,000 from being number one. I'm not wow. kidding. So, so far, Mr. Black has answered questions under pressure tonight, and he is a heck of a guesser. number one movie in the country 10 years ago this weekend was There's Something About Mary.
That
feels longer than 10 years
I
ago.
I know, man.
That's true. But, you know, what's interesting about There's Something About Mary was, again, you talk about a gross-out comedy, but it was just very smart and took, and you don't see this anymore, but it took that movie 8 weeks in release before it hit the number one mark. Imagine that today.
Wow.
Yeah, you don't see that, no.
No, that does not happen.
Does not
maybe that happened. Did Juno kind of come close to that? Kind of sleeper and then blew up?
Yeah, I guess it'd be more apt to happen with the indie films. But the reason why that happens in the indie films, they start out in a low number of theaters, and the more good reviews that come out, the more people start talking about it and people want to see it, then they start releasing it in more and more theaters, and therefore it starts to make more and more money. I don't know, is that the same thing that happened with Something About Mary, or did that just... I think that just blew up in theaters.
Yeah, it blew up.
That was one of the... I don't know, you know, you may call it one of the last true word-of-mouth movies. I mean, it didn't have a huge marketing blitz for it. Of course, it was... It is hard for just straight comedies to do well in the summer because there's so many action movies and so many family films out, so there's a lot of competition. And this movie just kept on going. And I think it also benefited from it spilled over into August and September when there's not as many big budget movies to go up against. But I was very impressed, and I'm still a little blown away with Mr. Black's guess. Blade was second that week. Saving Private Ryan was third. It was dying down. It was at $170 million already. But that's pretty impressive. There's Something About Mary. $130 million is what that ended up making. So, bravo. Good guess. That's this week in box office history, people. All right, let's get into just your basic industry talk. I mean, if anybody has anything they want to just throw out there, I know there's a lot of great stories on the site this week, and we're glad that everybody's checking that out. The one I'm most excited about is Ghostbusters 3. I'm a huge fan. I think if you remember watching Ghostbusters when you were a kid, you remember Bill Murray getting slimed, and you remember the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. You might go back and watch Ghostbusters now in your 20s or 30s or whatever, and you see, wow, there's just, again, good comedy writing in that film. I mean, it was hilarious.
Yeah. I hope that they can continue that type of writing for the Ghostbusters films. It was so good. I mean, you watch it today and it's still, I laugh every time I watch it. They really got to live up to the expectation that has been set, you know?
Well, and of course, we can go around and everybody give their opinions. Is this a movie everybody wants to see made?
Well, I'm out of the loop. Is the whole cast coming back?
I want to see it made right.
Yeah.
If they're going to go through with it, it seems like they're going to go through with it. I just hope that they do it right. Because I don't want to end it up like, when they did the Indiana Jones. I know you liked it, EMH. I didn't like it. I thought it just didn't have what the old movies had. It didn't have the same type of feel, the rustic feel that those other movies had. And I'm so scared that when they bring back Ghostbusters, it's going to lose that certain charm that the original had. And that charm is what made that movie. I'm afraid that charm is not going to be there. That's my number one fear, is that that movie is going to just lose its charm when they do this third one.
There's a lot more to fear than that, just in general in the world, but this movie, yes.
Exactly. Well, I think the effects are going to probably be... Ghosts. Oh, sorry.
Go. No, I was just going to say actual ghosts are kind of scary. Go ahead.
Oh, but I think the effects are going to be something that's obviously going to be updated. And there's something, you know, when you watch the movies now, and they kind of have a grittier feel to the effects, and they feel more practical, and we're going to see a lot. I mean, in the same way Indiana Jones has that weird CG feel to it, I think this might have the risk of having that same feel.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll be you know, to try to dumb it down a little bit. I think what you might be saying is it's gonna feel like a big budget movie.
Yes.
The first one and even the second one didn't necessarily feel like that, or maybe that's just because it was the 80s and they didn't have anywhere near the budgets that they do have today, even in the big budget movies.
Well, not even with technology. The technology's changed so much as well.
Exactly.
But you're going to see, like, when you look at those ghosts in the first couple movies, it's, you know, they're, like, tangible. You know, they built, like, a puppet out of it. You know what I mean? And then they applied those 80s effects to it. You know for a fact that they're going to have...
CG
everywhere, and you're going to be able to tell. I like the practicality of those ghosts in the first couple movies.
See, it just depends on the director. If the director's willing to go practical, I mean, like, look at Dark Knight. So much of that was practical. You know,
but you know they're not going to do that for this. I mean, it's gonna
they're going to go all CG.
It'll be 90% CG, and they're going to cast, you know, the hottest comic actors in Hollywood right now, and it's just, I don't know.
I mean, they said, Harold Ramis said that they want to have the original cast in there, that they would appear in the film in some mentor capacity, which means they'll be in the movie, but they're not going to play, like, this major role. So the way I think I see this is they're going to have their little fire station. They're going to be like the four old fire chiefs in this, but Ghostbuster chiefs, and they're going to be running the show with some younger guys, obviously, is probably how this is all going to work out.
Yeah.
And that Bill Murray is going to be funny. I hope Bill Murray really is coming back.
Well, according to the email,
they can't do it without Dr. Venkman.
Yeah, because Aykroyd is solid, but he's not hilarious, and I don't think he's ever been hilarious, haha, funny.
Yeah,
I think he's a good setup man for Bill Murray. I think he was a good setup man for John Candy in The Great Outdoors. I think he's a good setup man for Anna Shlumsky and My Girl. That was more of a joke on that one, but he's a good setup man, and I think that Harold Ramis, in all honesty, is one of the best comedy writers and directors that we've ever had in show business. But
yes,
you know, he's not, you know, the best actor or funniest actor, you know. So I think Bill Murray's got to be involved. I think it's a good sign that Bill Murray put his voice on the video game, so he still has some sort of connection. It's not like, well, I did Lost in Translation. Lost in Translation, and now I'm a potential Oscar winner, and I got to be more serious, and I can't associate with Ghostbusters. No, he didn't. I mean, he put his voice in the video game. That's you know. So did apparently Ernie Hudson.
And he did the voice of Garfield, and he did the City of Ember movie. I mean, he's done a lot of things that stick in the genre of what he's done. He'll be fine.
But I will tell you this, and this is what I think that you, Venkman, and some of you other people on the panel might not like. Indiana Jones 4 was not made for us. It was made for our kids. And Ghostbusters 3 is not going to be made for us. It's going to be made for our kids. And so it's going to be a movie that is CGI'd out the wazoo, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's going to be a movie that where they do get some of your more. I mean, don't be surprised if one of the Ghostbusters has a 16-year-old daughter played by Miley Cyrus and she's trying to bust into the business. I mean, the movie is going to play down to that. What you have to do is like I did with Indiana Jones, just be like, you know what, it's nice to see that the Ghostbusters are doing okay. It's nice to see my boys back on the screen. I mean, and more than anything else, if you just watch the movie and say, oh, yeah, remember in the first two when they were funnier? Yeah, this is a good time. So, you know, you're spending 12 bucks to remember when it was funny.
Another thing I'm scared about this movie is when we go and watch it, I'm afraid that the dialogue is going to be reuse dialogue from the first two movies. That these younger guys are gonna like be quoting the first two movies in certain points. I hate when they do that. And this is one of those movies. It's one of the most quotable movies, you know, ever. And then I think that they're gonna start quoting the old Ghostbusters film throughout Ghostbusters 3. And that's gonna piss me off. I want new lines. We need new quoting material.
That is true. We always need more of that. But I'm excited. Obviously, we got a long way to go before this will be released. But it's you know, at least something to talk about. Sticking in the big budget blockbuster topic, looks like Tobey Maguire and Sam Raimi have said yes, we are going to re-up for Spider-Man 4 and 5, and I don't know. Spider-Man 3 really, really messed things up for me.
Yeah, when I walked out of Spider-Man 3, I was like, well, I guess we're not going to get a fourth movie because that was just terrible. I hated that movie. Mr. Black walked out of that movie.
I still don't even know how it ended.
It ended bad. You don't need to know. It just was bad.
Well, there's a point in the movie where it feels like it could have ended, and then we could have had a great fourth film, but it didn't.
They just kept milking it.
I wish they would have fleshed out the character of Sandman a lot more. Because I thought the character was great. I wish they would have had Venom come out at the very end of the movie, like Venom, like you know the bell tower scene. And the black ooze is dripping down on Brock, and all of a sudden it starts eating him, and then the big mouth opens, and he, you know, the camera zooms in his mouth or whatever. That should have been the end of the movie. And then they could have did 4 and 5 and fleshed out an awesome Venom story instead of putting Venom in for 30 minutes of film.
Tacking on the end.
You know,
he should have had his own movie. Yeah, it should have been his own movie, just Venom versus Spider-Man.
Well, Raimi never liked Venom, so do you think he just kind of put it in there to appease fans and maybe producers and just kind of like, I'm going to kill Venom for sure, and, you know, I'm going to still be 4 or 5.
If Raimi didn't like him, then it was definitely a studio decision. The executives wanted to throw all these villains in and make Spider-Man emo because being emo is like the new fad these days, I guess. Well, can relate to emo Peter Parker, I guess.
Yeah. Well, see, my problem is I'm getting very tired of the need for two villains. Going all the way back to, you know, look at Batman when it became Batman and Batman Forever, and you had Tommy Lee Jones and Jim Carrey, or what, the Riddler, and Two-Face, you know, the first time they did Two-Face.
And Poison Ivy.
And then, and Batman and Robin, it was
Poison Ivy, Iceman.
Mr. Freeze, whatever Governor Schwarzenegger was doing. And, I mean, and look at Spider-Man 3, you had these two villains, and either one of them, I guess, I could have been more interested in.
You also had Hobgoblin. villain too in that in three as
well.
Yeah, golly,
getting on my nerves. Can't I mean? First of all, I think the Batman. I mean, the Spider-Man movies are too long, and I know a lot of people, critics really seem to like the second one. My problem is, I feel like when I go see Spider-Man 2, that I'm just watching poor Peter Parker get kicked in the Johnson for 2 hours, and then the last 30 minutes in a fight that he basically loses, but then somehow wins, you know, with some sort of miraculous, you know, something. It just Spider-Man 2 is like, oh my gosh, it was almost like watching Shawshank Redemption. You felt so bad for him the whole movie, and then you were happy at the end when he survived. Go get him, Tiger, you know. But still, it almost like it wasn't worth all the beating he took. And then Spider-Man 3, more of the same, and villains that I wasn't as interested in. So,
but look at Spider-Man 2. I mean, Spider-Man 2 only had one villain.
Yeah, I was happy about that.
And I think that's one of the reasons why I liked it, because they actually fleshed out that character.
Yeah, it was actually a character, too.
Doc Ock, exactly.
He was he had personality to him. He wasn't just like a bad guy and that's it, you know?
Yeah, I liked that part. I mean, I thought Doc Ock was a good villain. So I think what they need to do is Spider-Man 4 should just be a reimagining of Spider-Man 3. Spider-Man 3 coming soon.
Just forget Spider-Man 3 ever happened and just continue from there.
Exactly. So it'll be pick up from where Spider-Man 2 left off. And let's be honest, audiences, they don't care. I mean, they really don't. I mean, it's us on this panel and some devoted people that go to the site, and we're the only ones that care. Everybody else
Dotson.
Just, you
know, Dotson. We've got Dotson here. Nobody cares.
Well, you know, it's like a few weeks ago. I go see Step Brothers, and I don't know these days what y'all are paying for the movies in California, but we have
$12.
Okay, we have a new theater that opened up in Huntsville, which is about a half hour from where I live, and it reminded me of the Grove in Beverly Hills, because Binkman took me out to the Grove one night when I was there, and you paid extra money to get the extra special seats in the balcony.
You don't have to pay extra money for those anymore, by the way. Those are free for all, and they don't even serve you anymore. They used to have the waitresses that come and serve you. No more. It's gone.
Well, now down here, we finally have one of those. I mean, they don't come serve you, but you're paying $12 to get into those theaters, and a regular ticket is $9. The thing is, you still have three or four 16, 17-year-olds that come to the movies a half hour after it started and just walk on in, and you're thinking, I'm tired of hearing people complain about the economy when they're coming to a movie that late at night, and they're all eating candy and popcorn, and you know, nowadays, you're dropping $30-$40 at the movies, and it's just ridiculous. And so that's why I'm saying I don't think the audiences really care about stories anymore. They want to see the big special effects, or if it's a comedy, they just want to have a laugh every 30 seconds. That's it.
I
hate
that.
I agree. I hate that. I was in Ohio for a little bit. EMH was there with me, and I hated going to the movies in Ohio because it was loud. I've never been in a louder theater. People just talking on their cell phones, just living their life.
We're sitting there trying to watch The Ring, and people are just chit-chatting about nothing. And I mean, not only coming into the movies 20 minutes late, but then getting up and walking out and coming back in 20 minutes later.
And then getting walking out and then having someone's mom come in and be like, hey, Bob, are you in here? Where are you? I can't find you, Bob.
Exactly. You're right. That's how it is. And people just don't care. I'll tell you someone who does care. John Moore. You see what I did there? Okay, John Moore, in case y'all don't know, he's the director of the new Max Payne movie, which is apparently stars one Marky Mark Wahlberg. And apparently,
I don't think he knows Marky Mark anymore.
Okay, then my apologies. He really does, apparently. But I mean, I like him. But yeah, and he looks cool in this movie, Max Payne. But apparently John Moore is whining about the fact that, you know, the movie, I guess the first cut, has been saddled with an R rating, and he's trying to go back and make cuts to get the rating down to PG-13 or something. But he's really ticked off. And then, once again, you know, as we saw Mark Wahlberg do it, saying that he could beat up Batman, now we got John Moore saying that The Dark Knight is deserved more than a PG-13. And the truth of the matter is, I'm not totally disagreeing with Mr. Moore on this.
I'm not either, to be honest with you.
He just, it does.
I'm just being honest here, too. I'm not even lying.
I disagree with him, but he's a baby for whining about it. Yeah. Everyone knows.
You know. Well, yeah, and here's the thing, too, is when I first saw the trailer to Max Payne, I was like, oh, rated R. Easy. I just did not see a PG-13 movie in that, because it just, with all the gun shooting, the people dying, the crazy death winged skeletons pulling people out of windows, it didn't seem like a PG-13 movie. And I thought from the get-go that, hey, this movie is R, and we're making it to be rated R. That's what I thought. And so I was prepping up for an R-rated movie anyway.
Yeah.
So when he comes out and says, you know, oh, man, they gave us an R rating, you know, saying that I wanted a PG-13.
Like, I mean, he goes on to he talks about the makeup of the Motion Picture Association of America acting like they're a bunch of conservative right-wing stiffs or something. And I'm like, you guys, you got to be kidding me, you know, to act like that there is some sort of bias. I understand that you take a movie like Star Wars: Revenge of the Sith. You know, that if somebody else makes that movie, very similar movie, if they're not named George Lucas and if it's not a Star Wars film, they're probably not getting a PG rating out of that. I mean, I do believe that it happens. I mean, Pirates of the Caribbean, what was it, the second or the third one was rated PG-13, or was it the first one? I don't even remember.
I don't remember.
But. Which, you know, I'll get right on that. I'll effort that right now. You guys talk amongst yourselves. I mean, I see what you're saying. I agree with his point. But I think in making his point, his reasoning is stupid. That's
Well, at the same time, I kind of agree with them for the fact that they did give The Dark Knight a PG-13 rating. They did.
That was dark.
That was a dark movie. I mean, just the magic trick that the Joker show at the beginning. I mean, that is evil. That is like, that's dark.
That was so cool, though.
It was great. but I mean, you know, The Dark Knight was a dark movie, and for that to get a PG-13 rating, I was, wow, that is actually PG-13.
I want to bring up a question. Why is this guy trying to make Max Payne PG-13? If you remember the video game, it was an M title.
Yeah, exactly. The video game was for mature audiences only. Blood all throughout that thing. And he said in an interview that he was going to stay true to the video game. So I was expecting, that's why I was expecting just an R film. Because if he's going to stay true to the video game, then it's going to be R. If he's not, and he's going to make his own PG-13 version, then that's how it's going to be. I say, show me the R-rated version. That's the version I want to see anyway.
Yeah, same here.
Well, yeah.
But the studios want to make the money. The studios want to broaden their audience, so that's why they want the PG-13 rating. But you know what? All those kids, we're going to see it when the PG-13, they're going to also go see it, even if it's R.
Right. You know? Well, I mean, a lot of people assume that. I mean, but if you look at the numbers,
I was one of those guys. I was one of those guys. I admit, growing up, I wasn't, you know, old enough to see a rated R movie. I got in anyway.
Thank you, Bateman. No, but I mean, if you go and you look at the biggest movies of all time, you know, you have to go all the way to number 12 before you find an R-rated movie, and that was The Passion of the Christ. And I really think that is more of a, that's more of an anomaly, or maybe that's not the right term, but to say, well, that's a movie about Jesus, and so much of the world is Christian, and so they're going to go see that movie. You got to get all the way. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that the MPPAA, if they're right wing Christian nuts, then wouldn't they have made The Passion of the Christ rated PG-13?
that's a good point.
Wouldn't they have opened that to a broader audience?
Well, I think they would have given it a G. Jesus.
Oh, gosh. That's a very good point. It's a church film, so it must be rated G. But if you look at the biggest R-rated movies ever, and number 12, Passion of the Christ, you got to go all the way to number 36, which I'm going to say Keanu Reeves one more time, because The Matrix Reloaded is the number 36 movie of all time. And it, again, rated R. So you're talking about, you know, two movies in the top 40, and I'm quickly just, I don't want to have dead space here, but I'm scrolling down and you got to get pretty far to find. You got to get all the way to Beverly Hills Cop at number 56 before you see another R-rated movie. And so, you know, the numbers do show that if we can get that PG-13 rating, that's the sad part. Is again that parents aren't really policing it very well for content. They see PG-13, yeah. They think, oh yeah, my kid can see that. But that's what he's trying to do. And I just think he's being a weasel about it.
Yeah, I think. I lost my train of thought.
That's okay. Is a motion picture.
I'm talking all of a sudden as I'm talking to catch up to my thought. The thought leaves my head. Great.
Nice. I'll tell you what. We're gonna move along. If you want to come back to it, you go right ahead, Bingham. First of all, really quick. I know last week we did bring up 24, and we talked about this TV movie. And I couldn't find any information at the time, and nobody else had heard about it. I pulled up an article. This is from USA Today, and it was printed back on the 15th of July. But it says that there is going to be, on November 23rd, it's called 24 Exile, and it's going to be a two-hour television movie that is supposed to be a bridge to connect Season 6 and Season 7.
Nice.
Where you're actually, the President of the United States is going to be a woman this time. I forget
Janine
her real
Garofalo's,
name.
Janine Garofalo's, is she going to be in that one?
Well, she's not going to be the president, but yeah, she's supposed, I don't know if she's supposed to be in the movie. I apparently she's going to be on the cast for season 7, and I actually, I like Janine Garofalo as an actress. She has such a dry wit and a dry sense of humor. And when she plays the right characters, it's actually pretty entertaining. I thought she did a lot on season 7 of The West Wing that I thought was pretty cool.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say
the production of 24, which it was recently shut down. It hasn't shut down yet, but they're shutting down like next week to take 2 weeks to figure out what they plan on doing with the last six episodes because they didn't like the direction it was going.
Don't you find that pretty refreshing that they're willing to do that?
Refreshing and kind of...
They're backpedaling.
It's like, what did they have? I mean, didn't they have the whole show planned out in the first place, or... Are they writing this on the spot?
Well, apparently the last 6 hours of the day, they were just going to have a dance party. So
it was really going to level off at the last 6 hours. I think Jack Bauer was finally going to go to sleep, and that was going to be the last six episodes. No, I love 24, and there's no, in my opinion, there's no doubt that the last season was way down. I mean, I did not like it. And the problem with a show like 24, and you see this in other, in these movies that constantly have more sequels, 24, if you remember season 1, he worked at CTU, and there was going to be an assassination attempt on a guy that was running for a Democratic primary for the presidency. Yeah. And then his daughter was kidnapped. If you compare that to the fact that by season 3, we had viruses that were being leaked and hundreds of thousands of people's lives were at stake?
Yeah.
Wasn't it, season two, there was a nuclear bomb. The ante yeah. was upped. I mean, you know, President Palmer assassinated on the first episode of season five or whatever it was. I mean, just, it's almost like Jack Bauer is... Right now, I don't think there's a more sympathetic character than Jack Bauer. The man does not get any joy in his life at all.
I'm really looking forward to this season where he has to stop invasion of aliens from taking over Los Angeles. That's what I'm waiting for.
And see, that's the thing.
Because if anyone can do it, Jack Bauer can do it.
Or Chuck Norris.
But it's kind of like what we were talking about with the movie audiences. Isn't it sad? I mean, don't you think that a show where the writing has been that good and the creativity is that good, does he have to be saving the entire world for us to really be interested? Could he not just be trying to save one group of people or even, you know, one important person? I mean, does it have to be?
It'd be just as intense. You know, if the writing's good, the story's good, it'd be just as intense.
I think it's more intense, actually.
I have to bring up real quick about the last season, and I love 24, but some things I just laugh at and find ridiculous. Like, for the fact that he was hiding out in Santa Clarita, California, 30 minutes away from where he worked. I thought he'd be out of the country.
Like, they'll never think to look for me right here.
My daughter thinks I'm dead. What she doesn't know is I live 15 minutes away from her.
Well, yeah, I mean, you understand there's some things their hands are tied with. I mean, if you put Jack Bauer hiding out in Iceland somewhere, then half the show or half the season would be him on a plane trying to get back. I mean, it's the same reason why, I mean, they originally were going to start this next season in Africa, and then somebody kind of figured out, whoa, it'd be kind of hard to get Jack from Africa to the United States, and nobody wants to watch 24 episodes of a guy in Africa. I mean, it was just this, you know, if we don't see buildings threatened and what we know is our everyday life, then I do think you lose audiences. But I'm excited. I love 24, and by the time it debuts, you know, in January, we will have been without it for 2 years. And so, in a way, it almost feels like The Sopranos, when that used to go away forever and come back.
I'm excited.
Okay. I got a question for you guys. I'm going to put you on the spot again, but take your time. I want to know what the best thing you saw this week was, whether it be at the box office, on a video rental, or something you saw on television, or even if you just pulled an old DVD off the shelf and watched it for the 100th time. Tell me what the best thing you saw this week was. Anyone?
I rewatched Phone Booth. I don't know why I did it, but great movie. Colin Farrell was great in it. Schumacher, I don't know if remember the last good thing you made, but that was a great movie.
And isn't it cool that Kiefer Sutherland is affiliated with that movie?
Yeah.
And we just talked about 24. I agree. I mean, again, I think it's – I always find it intriguing when a movie comes out and says, you know what? We've got one little setting here. This is it. This is our story. And we're going to do our best to make this an entire movie. And Colin Farrell was just become Mr. Popular, and he also has acting ability. Kiefer Sutherland has a tremendous voiceover voice. I mean, you don't listen to him. You don't have to see him for him to be empowering. And then Forest Whitaker, at the time, you could have said, Forest Whitaker is one of the most underrated actors in Hollywood. Now, of course, he has an Oscar, so you can't really say that anymore. But it was tremendous. I think that's a great pick. Who's next?
I watched the entire second season of Dexter this week.
Still on the Dexter fix.
I actually watched the last episode, the season finale of Dexter season 2 today, As you know, Dexter Season 3, you may or may not know, Dexter Season 3 starts up today, tonight, and I'm looking forward to watching that. But I really, the show is twisted as hell, but I love it. You know, the show was just done so well. I love the characters, the stories, just how everything works in that show is just awesome. So cool. I'm really looking forward to this season.
Anyone else?
I caught up with a show that was recommended to me. The Dresden Files. It's kind of interesting. And also The Lost Room. I would recommend The Lost Room. Okay. It's really good. It's just an amazing concept.
I'm not familiar with Dresden. What's that about?
It's about a wizard who operates in our world, kind of like an everyday life. It has kind of the same feel as like the Buffy series or Angel.
Uh-huh.
It has that kind of tone, I think.
Okay.
Excellent.
But it's a wizard.
But it's a wizard. Well, for me, you know, and again, I certainly am not trying to sway anybody politically. I've had a great time the last 2 weeks watching the conventions. I mean, to me, okay. That was good theater.
No. It was. I agree. I did have fun watching those as well.
That was good theater. I thought, you know, the week before last, I thought Barack Obama gave was a pretty entertaining speech. I mean, I've been talking to my son about it, and I said, you know, politics is a lot about just your personality, and when that guy speaks, he's a good speaker. Just like I thought Bill Clinton was a tremendous speaker, and I'm certainly not giving away who I voted for or anything, because I'm fascinated with how public speakers. I mean, when you give a speech on that level, you have the power to really persuade people. I mean, we get up here and we talk about movies and television, and we're hoping that somebody out there maybe values our opinions enough and will check out a movie that we recommend, and we feel good when that happens. Imagine speaking not just to tens of thousands of people in person, but all the people watching on television and trying to shape, obviously, much more important opinions. So, I mean, I thought Obama gave a great speech, and I thought Sarah Palin at the Republican convention last week gave an awesome speech. I mean, it's pretty cool that, you know, you see an African-American presidential candidate 1 week, and then the next week you also see the first, well, let's just say, legitimate nominee for vice president, first legitimate female nominee for vice president. Because, you know, with all due respect to Geraldine Ferraro, she was running against Ronald Reagan and George Bush, and I don't know if they won one state. They may have won a couple, but anyway, I like that. And then The Office Season 4, that came out last Tuesday. I bought it yesterday.
Nice.
And first thing I always do is pop in the deleted scenes. I'm telling you right now, so like I said last week, get those DVDs, watch the deleted scenes. I laughed every bit as hard watching the deleted scenes as I do watching a regular episode. It was hilarious.
Nice. I'm going to do that. I'm going out to buy it right after we're done.
Do you have the other seasons, Bateman?
Do you have
the other seasons? Okay,
good. I do.
Anyone else? What'd you guys like?
Yeah, I'm really into this show called The Middleman, which shows up on ABC Family Channel, of all things.
And
I think that's a show every geek should watch, just because of all the geek references in that. It's a brilliantly written show.
I've actually seen that, and I really enjoyed it. At first, I wasn't quite sure if I was going to like it as I'm watching it, but the more I watched, the more I got into it, and the more I liked it. So, yeah, I agree.
Who's in that? What's that about?
That's basically, it's about a quote-unquote superhero named the Middleman, and he recruits this young, you know, female who's looking for a job as a sidekick.
Nice.
But the funny thing about the show is it's entirely written for geeks. I mean, there's so many subtle references to movies and to comic books and to just everything that any geek would be into, and it's just brilliantly written, just very well done. I think everybody should just check it out at least once.
I could have swore one of the episodes I saw had about 4 or 5 quotes from Ghostbusters in it.
Yeah, they have an episode that is basically a Ghostbuster kind of theme episode. Yeah,
I mean, yeah.
It's a great show.
Doesn't it make you feel like you're watching kind of like The Tick?
Yeah.
In a way, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm glad you said subtle geek references. I thought, like, for a second there, we were like, oh, geek references. Like, you know, the guy's like, hey, don't you love glasses? Like,
no, it's more like for, like, movie geeks and comic book geeks and stuff. Like Venkman said about the Ghostbuster references, they're just very, very subtle, and it was just, it's brilliantly written.
Don't you love reading?
I mean, that's how we talk.
And the internet.
It's like how we talk in real life. It's like in real life. We quote movies all the time.
Yeah. Oh, that's definitely true. anyone else out there have a best thing you saw this week? All right. I tell you what. For me, well, I was going to ask you. Anybody got anything they definitely want people to go see this week? Either at the movies, the video store, or on television.
You know, there weren't a lot of movies that came out this week, so I'm not going to. I'm not gonna endorse Bangkok Dangerous at all. I probably won't even see it myself. I will say I would suggest to go look at your local theater that shows independent films and see what small films are out there that you could catch this week, because since there's nothing else out, I would either do that or I would go see The Dark Knight again.
Right. I'll tell you what, this Friday coming out to theaters, movies that I'm particularly interested in, it looks, if the trailer is any indication, it looks like the Coen brothers have done it once again.
Oh,
Burn
yes.
After Reading looks yes. absolutely that, hilarious.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that one.
I mean, Brad Pitt, George Clooney in the same movie, that usually works.
Yeah, I'm excited for that one.
Excited for that
I'll
one.
I'll be there.
Also, and Righteous Kill, which I don't know if they pushed this release back from earlier, because I've been seeing trailers for a long time. De Niro and Pacino, of course, they were both in The Godfather Part II, but they didn't have any scenes together. I think they finally did Heat back in the 90s, and both of them were actually on screen at the same time, and now they've teamed up to do this movie, Righteous Kill, which actually looks pretty darn good.
Yeah, I agree. Really want to see this film.
It looks really good, but they're giving away a little bit too much in the trailers again. You know, like they're.
I don't think they are. I think they're giving you the false twist.
But the thing is they are marketing the twist. It's. Obviously, it's going to be like, you
like
won't see it coming when it comes.
You won't believe how it ends.
I'm just going to call out Donnie Wahlberg and just say it's him.
Very nice. I tell you what, I'm intrigued to see it. I do think it's interesting if you buy some of these DVDs, or just go online, of course, and watch trailers for movies that came out in the 50s and 60s. I tell you what, you'll watch a trailer and you'll say, I can't even tell you the plot of this movie. They show a few clips. Sometimes they would just show a scene of a movie and then tell you the big stars in it and then say, that's it. That's your movie. And the sad thing is, sometimes I think maybe we should, you know, go back to that, because trailers are giving away so much.
Yeah, way too much.
Look up the original movie, the original trailer for Star Wars. It's the most hilarious thing. A boy, a girl, space, rookies. Go see it.
Brother and sister, kiss.
Since you guys did the movies that you would recommend, sounds like everybody's kind of interested in Righteous Kill and Burned After Reading, and we'll let the ladies go see The Women, which opens up this week as well.
Oh yes, gosh,
definitely.
There was ever a studio film.
Definitely, my friends.
On DVD coming out this week, you got the fourth season of Grey's Anatomy, which I don't watch. You got Smallville, the seventh season coming out, which I don't watch. So if you guys,
it's good. It is good.
There was only one episode there was one episode I absolutely hated in that season, but that's it. Just one bad episode. The rest of them were good.
The one with Clark in it.
It was the one with Clark in it.
Other notable titles, you got The Forbidden Kingdom coming out on DVD. CSI Miami, the sixth season of CSI Miami. Baby Mama with Tina Fey. And
I want to see that.
Yeah, I think I might catch that. Yeah, didn't see it in theaters. So.
And let's see, second season of Ugly Betty and the 10th anniversary limited edition of The Big Lebowski, another Coen Brothers
movie. Oh, yeah, buddy.
Which is one of the funniest movies I've ever seen.
You know, I recently read an interview with Julianne Moore, and she said, she goes, one day I am going to go to a Lebowski fest. She goes, yeah. She's like, I would love to go to one, and one day I will. So that's pretty cool. I've always wanted to go to a Lebowski fest myself. I've tried to plan it out a few times, but it never works out.
EMH.
Bangman, we just said a real name. That's it. You're going to get us booted out.
He's 3 for 3, man.
That's true. Bangman does it every week. All right, well, I'll tell you what. The last thing I'm going to push is Kitchen Nightmares. I told you, one of my guilty pleasures. That TV show is absolutely hilarious with Chef Gordon Ramsay, the guy from Hell's Kitchen. He goes to these restaurants that are failing, and he tries to whip them into shape and just totally ticks off the owners and says, everything you're doing sucks, and you need to do it this way. And usually by the time he leaves, the restaurant's making money. So the season premiere of that comes on this week. Also, are you guys watching this show Wipeout on ABC?
They're
basically doing these obstacle courses. Look, I hate reality television as a whole. But this to me is more like a reality game show.
It's based around Japanese game shows.
Exactly, which I think are entertaining, but I think they just go so far over the edge, and it's like watching, you know, just loud madcap craziness. Wipeout is just, you know what, let's get to the people falling down and bouncing off these giant rubber balls. And so that's a guilty pleasure. I record that every week and watch Wipeout. Other than that, I've got nothing else to recommend. But I'll tell you what, this has been an interesting night. Does anybody want to add anything else before we wrap this bad boy up?
No, they were good.
That's great.
Yeah, we're good.
We've talked as long as people can talk. How about that?
Yeah.
Well, good. Well, you know, I tell you what, this has been awesome. My only regret is that I don't think we heard enough from Abe Froman, the Sausage King of Chicago. hopefully we'll get him. We'll get some topics. He has more to say next week or something. But this has been great. Abe Froman, Mr. Black, Mazer, Finkman, myself, EMH. This has been awesome. And I guess
definitely.
We'll see you guys next week. Say bye, guys.
Hey, take it easy.
Bye.
Night. Night is.